Hello and welcome to today's episode of The Quad Shot, where we help you down and digest the day's most pertinent cancer news. It's July 20, 2020. Welcome to The Quadcast. Let's dive in. First up, five. So you might be wondering, is there any long-term data comparing 5-fraction whole breast radiation to conventional fractionation? Well, now there is. The FAST trial, no, not the FAST forward trial, which we've also highlighted, but the FAST trial was initially reported in 2011 and subsequently was presented at ASTRO's annual meeting in 2018. It compared 50 gray and 25 fractions to 28.5 gray as well as 30 gray in 5 weekly fractions. So who was eligible? Low-risk women that were over the age of 50 who had less than 3-centimeter invasive tumors following an R0 lumpectomy, who didn't need a boost and didn't get chemo. So here we have the 10-year results as published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology 2020 by Brunt et al., looking at control and physician-assessed late effects, as well as 5-year results of photographic breast appearance. At 5 years, 80% of patients had no change in the photographic appearance, 18% had mild change, and 3% had marked change. If we look at the 50 gray and 25 fraction reference and the 28.5 gray and 5 weekly fractions arm at 5 years follow-up, there are similar rates of mild and marked change in breast appearance. But compared to the 50 gray and 25 arm, rates were worse for the 30 gray and 5 arm, with mild being 21% and marked being 4%. Physician-assessed normal tissue effects, mainly breast shrinkage, at 10 years were again fairly similar for the 50 gray arm as well as the 28.5 gray arm. But again, 30 and 5 was worse. The absolute difference in any moderate or marked normal tissue effects at 10 years when compared to the standard 50 gray and 25 fractions was 5% worse for the 28.5 and 5, and 9% worse for the 30 and 5. The cumulative incidence of ipsilateral breast tumor events at 10 years was really low, at 1.3%, and there were no obvious differences between groups. The bottom line is, at 10 years, there is no significant difference in the rate of local control or moderate and marked late toxicity for women with low-risk breast cancer receiving 28.5 gray in 5 weekly fractions as compared to 50 gray in 25 fractions. Up second, a smart approach. Stereotactic magnetic resonance-guided adaptive radiation therapy, also known as SMART, is helping radiation oncologists dose escalate to never before seen radiation doses in tricky places. Here we have a single institution series, as published in Advances in Radiation Oncology 2020 by Hassanzada et al., that looked at 44 patients treated at WashU with a SMART approach to deliver 50 gray in 5 fractions to non-metastatic, inoperable pancreatic adenocarcinoma. Systemic therapy was held 1 week prior to, during, and 1 week after radiation. The name of the game here was dose constraints. All GI structures, including esophagus, stomach, duodenum, and small and large bowel, were limited to less than 0.75 cc's receiving 36 gray or higher. The goal was that greater than 95% of the planning target volume received at least 95% of the prescription dose. But, and this is key, this objective was forfeited in favor of the aforementioned constraints. All patients received MR stimulation with daily deformable MR image guidance, with a new plan generated if any constraint was violated or if there was significant potential to improve target coverage. In the end, a whopping 93% of all treatments required re-optimization. So, was it all worth it? Well, at a median follow-up of 16 months, limited by survival, which was also 16 months, there were only 3 grade 2 and only 2 grade 3 late toxicities, all GI, as expected. Equally impressive were the local control rates of 84% at 1 year and 59% at 2 years. Freedom from any progression or death was 52% at 1 year and only 14% at 2 years, serving as a stark reminder that further advances in systemic therapy remain paramount. The bottom line is, MR-guided adaptive radiation appears to be a safe and effective, if also workflow intensive, way of achieving excellent local control of advanced pancreatic cancer. Up next, just give it. There's an age-old, okay, it's only a few years old, but there's a question that's been around for a while of what to give first for advanced melanoma. Do you give a BRAF and MEK inhibitor, or do you give immune checkpoint inhibitors? This pooled analysis of 1,558 patients, as published in JAMA Oncology 2020 by Puzanov et al., looked at patients enrolled on 3 large KEYNOTE studies of pembrolizumab for melanoma and asked whether outcomes differed based on prior exposure to BRAF inhibitors with or without MEK inhibitors. Overall, neither response rate, progression-free survival, nor overall survival differed based on whether the patient was BRAF wild-type or BRAF mutant. As one might expect, those who failed prior BRAF and MEK inhibitors had worse disease characteristics. As such, prior BRAF and MEK inhibition was associated with significantly worse response rate, progression-free survival, and overall survival, even across subgroup and multivariate analyses. The bottom line is, while this Merck-funded publication recognizes melanoma refractory to BRAF and MEK inhibition is less likely to respond to subsequent pembrolizumab, and of course, in their eyes, everyone should clearly be getting pembrolizumab first anyway, giving pembro second line is still worth it to achieve a response rate in roughly a quarter of patients. Up next, another little piece of the heart. Cardiac dosimetry is emerging as an important predictor of survival after radiation for locally advanced non-small cell lung cancer. And we are learning that the heart is more than a single critical structure. I mean, who knew? In this study in the Red Journal 2020 by McWilliam et al., template cases were manually contoured to delineate 14 substructures of the heart, and nearly 1,000 real-world cases were then deformably registered to each of the 5 templates for dosimetric analysis. Of course, this was presumably done because there still aren't enough RADOC residents to contour these manually, despite the fact that there's a lot more residents than there used to be, but I digress. Interestingly, increasing dose to every substructure was associated with survival, so they used complex models to try and rank how important dose to each substructure was relative to the others. These models pointed to the right atrium, which is in line with RTOG 0617, if you'll remember the dose escalation study comparing 74 to 60 gray. Additionally, the right coronary artery and the ascending aorta were substructures that were most highly correlated with poor survival. The authors propose a threshold max dose limit of 23 gray EQD2 to each of these substructures. The bottom line is, while dose to the entire heart is important, increasing dose to the right atrium, right coronary artery, and proximal aorta might be associated with worse survival outcomes after radiation as compared to other subsites of the heart. Up next, nodes, no problem. So how aggressive should we be in treating nodal involvement in the setting of oligometastatic disease? Well, here's a large Italian retrospective review of 327 SBRT courses for nodal disease, most commonly treated with 7.5 gray times 6 fractions for a total of 45 gray, with a tumor BED of 78.75 gray. Local control was similar to previous reports of ablative radiation to other sites of oligometastatic disease, 87% at 1 year and 77% at 2 years. Median time to treatment intensification was 15 months. And in line with previous series, those with oligometastatic prostate cancer did even better. Notably, delivering a BED greater than or equal to 75 gray was associated with half the risk of local progression. Finally, failure in the same nodal region may not be as common as you'd think. Median time to regional nodal progression was nearly 4 years, more likely to occur in those requiring upfront treatment to more than a single node. The bottom line is, gross nodal disease should probably receive treatment in line with other sites of oligometastatic disease. Thanks to Franzese et al., Green Journal, 2020. Up next, lowering failure rates. Premature ovarian failure is a big risk with chemotherapy administration in younger women. While oocyte cryopreservation can preemptively aid future fertility efforts, did you know that ovarian suppression with the long-established GnRH agonists concurrent with chemotherapy can purportedly blunt its effects on ovarian suppression itself? This updated and expanded meta-analysis, as published in JCO 2020 by Lambertini et al., includes 873 premenopausal women on 5 prospective trials receiving chemotherapy for breast cancer, all randomized to plus or minus concurrent ovarian suppression. The rate of subsequent premature ovarian insufficiency was halved with ovarian suppression, taking it from 31% to 14%. And post-chemotherapy pregnancies were doubled from 5% to 10%. As expected, there were no differences in disease outcomes or survival. The bottom line is, the GnRH agonists we all know, if not love, may prove to substantially reduce the risk of chemo-induced premature ovarian failure. Up next, pardon our progress. Survival rates at 1 year for patients with melanoma brain metastases have nearly doubled from 12% to 22% in only a decade, from 2007 to 2016. This is occurring at the same time the use of BRAF and MEK inhibitors is soaring, less than 2% to 50%, and whole brain radiation is declining, going from 75% to 52%, in favor of increasing rates of radiosurgery, up from 3% to 21%, thanks to Brastianos et al., JAMA Network Open, 2020. Finally,
catch me outside, how about that?
Catch me outside. Outdoor gatherings are totally in vogue in pandemic America, as most emerging data points to an exponentially higher risk of COVID-19 transmission when indoors. Parker Pope, New York Times, 2020. This concludes today's episode of The Quad Shot. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and subscribing to our podcast. Also, check out our website at www.quadshotnews.com and subscribe to our newsletter. We'll catch you next time.